It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM, WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Reading the bill itself, people who grandstand and talk about reading the bill itself cannot possibly know what they're talking about and could never have read a bill themselves because the language is very technical, there are cross-references, they'll refer to a section unless you've got the code there where you can pull out what the cross-reference is, you don't know what they were talking about. A summary of that section will tell you the legislative intent.
Congressman Bobby Scott, who represents South Richmond, East Henrico, Newport News, and Norfolk, spoke about the federal budget to constituents and answered their questions and concerns at a town hall meeting on April 13 at the Henrico Theater, and the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there. And in this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn how payday lenders concentrate themselves among the desperate and the poor rather than evenly dispersed across the state. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 48, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Payday lending customers encompass a range of people, but lenders cluster in specific geographic locations. Virginia's lower-income zip codes have more payday loan locations than higher-income zip codes, according to an analysis by Capital News Service. Overall, Virginia had about 8 payday loan stores for every 100,000 people, and 9.6% of Virginians lived in poverty. But areas with the most payday lenders per capita were much poorer than the rest of the state as a whole. For example, Richmond had 11 payday loan stores per 100,000 people and a poverty rate of 12%. Portsmouth had 25 payday loan stores per 100,000 people and a poverty rate of 16%. Norfolk had 20 payday loan stores per 100,000 people and a poverty rate of 18%. And Southwest Virginia had 15 payday loan stores per 100,000 people and a poverty rate of 20%. Although payday lenders claim they are not targeting the poor, the facts prove otherwise. In other news, the New York Times recently examined the variations in 6 safety net programs for the poor around the country, and Virginia was among the bottom 10 states for both unemployment compensation and government health insurance for adults. Nationwide, 21% of poor adults and children receive cash welfare, but in Virginia, it's 18%. Nationally, 44% of the unemployed receive benefits, compared to 29% in Virginia. And nationwide, 41% of uninsured poor adults receive government health insurance, but only 34% do in Richmond. In the other 3 safety net programs, Virginia was about average, providing housing assistance to 31% of eligible households, 1% better than the national average, providing food stamps to 69% of eligible people, 2% better than the national average, and providing government health insurance to 71% of poor children, 2% worse than the national average. The result is a hit-or-miss system of relief that is dispersed through a jumble of disconnected programs that reach some and reject others, often for reasons of geography and chance, rather than differences in need. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is Small Claims Court. The Small Claims Court is a division of the General District Court where parties are not permitted to have attorneys. You can file a lawsuit in the Small Claims Division seeking up to $5,000 in damages. You can do this on your own, by yourself, and without an attorney. Unlike the regular division of General District Court, a case in Small Claims Court is heard and tried on the first court date, usually within 3 weeks after it is filed. However, if the defendant gets a lawyer, the case will be heard by the regular division of the General District Court. Formal rules of evidence don't have to be followed in small claims court, and the judgment is as good as any other judgment. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and small claims court is this week's legal term of the week.
Since 1993, Congressman Bobby Scott has represented Virginia's 3rd Congressional District, which includes South Richmond, East Enrico, Newport News, and Norfolk. On April 13, Congressman Scott held a town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater, speaking about the federal budget to constituents and answering their questions and concerns. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show was there and brings you part two of a two-part presentation.
With the budget bill, is it something that's available that we, the people, can read? Like the stimulus bill, is roughly $700 billion bill that was passed. And most members of Congress and the President admitted they signed it without reading it. Can we see the details?
Well, I think somebody who says they read the bills, reading the bill is not a productive use of your time, because usually if you read a bill, it'll have things like subsection, code section, this, that, and all the subsection is hereby deleted, or, you know, there's so many cross, and you, so what do you know now that you didn't know before? You read it. You don't know what the cross-reference applies to.
Well, then it should be written in plain language so that we, the people,
the technical language is 700 pages. You add script to that, I mean, you've got thousands of pages. What you want to read are summaries and analyses to tell you what the words, what the little technical jargon means. And those are available in... you know, you can get a short version, long version, very long version, and they are available. The Budget Committee on the budget has analyses, and if you go on that website, you can kind of pick your poison. You got some long versions, some one-page versions. Some of them go up to 30 or 40 pages, so you can read as much as you want about it in productive language. Reading the bill itself, people who grandstand and talk about reading the bill itself cannot possibly know what they're talking about and could never have read a bill themselves, because the language is very technical. There are cross-references. The section, they'll refer to a section. Unless you've got the code there where you can pull out what the cross-reference is, you don't know what they were talking about. A summary of that section will tell you the legislative intent.
One real pointed question. Are there provisions in this bill that provide funding to groups like LULAC, La Raza, The Race, and even ACORN, which really support giving taxpayers' dollars to illegal immigrants?
I don't think directly, but I mean, everybody can apply for grants like everybody else and for a specific purpose. There was some internet traffic and talk show traffic about ACORN getting money out of one of those packages. ACORN's name was not mentioned in the bill. So, I mean, it was just made up. There were a lot of things made up. Whether they can get money out of the bill, I'm not saying they can't get any money out of the bill, but if there's some money, if there's request for proposals, they make a proposal for a specific purpose. They would have to use the money for the purpose for which it was appropriated and subject to audit.
Although in many states, the group is under investigation for voter fraud.
Well, so is AIG. I mean, you're asking whether or not it's possible that they might get a grant. Anything's possible, but they would have to qualify for it. They'd have to use the money for the purpose for which it's appropriated. They don't have any inside track over anybody else. If the only person to apply for it, they probably might win the competition. But if your question is whether or not there's some money set aside for ACORN, no. But whether or not they can possibly get some money, I have no idea. I don't know what they're applying for. But there are a lot of opportunities for grants in the bill.
Congressman Scott and gentlemen, good evening. How are y'all? I would like to know if we have anything in the budget plans to reduce the incarceration rate of nonviolent offenders, the people that commit nonviolent crimes, such as a drug offender or somebody that shoplifts, because approximately 1 out of every 100 Americans are locked up in prison right now. And if they are in there for nonviolent crime, they could be out paying taxes and being productive. Just like this first lady that spoke, suppose somebody did a nonviolent crime to her, such as fraud. You know, if they get locked up in prison, how are they going to ever pay that elderly person back? And how would that elderly person ever get their money back if we keep on locking up people at this rate?
Well, some of the people who've committed fraud need to be in Bernie Madoff.
Well, I'm not going that.
He doesn't pay people back. You mentioned 1 out of 100. It's 1 out of 100 adults. We are the only country in the world that locks up anywhere close to that. In terms of dealing with nonviolent offenders, because we're locking up such a high portion of our population, a lot of states have figured out that codifying simple-minded slogans and sound bites, it's run our incarceration rate up to where it has been by research in the range of counterproductive. The Pew Research Forum or Foundation issued a report that said anything more than 300 per 100,000 was a question of diminishing returns. Over 500 per 100,000 is counterproductive. The United States incarceration rate is number one in the world at over 700 per 100,000. Some minority communities, it gets up to 4,000. 500 is counterproductive. What some communities, what some states are figuring out is that they've, with great political fanfare, been codifying all those sound bites, and now they ended up having to pay for them. And they're second guessing themselves, particularly as you have suggested, on nonviolent offenders, paying $25,000 to $35,000 a year, locking somebody up just because you had some slogan that had to be codified makes no sense. Unless there is some criminal justice rationale to it, we're just wasting the taxpayers' money, as the Pew Forum concluded. One of the things that is specifically in the bill is funding for the Second Chance Act. That is, those who are in jail, support for them just before they come out and right after they come out. We've had a lot of programs, some in Virginia, that have been very successful in reducing what's called recidivism, that is, those that go back to prison, significantly. About two-thirds of those that get out end up going right back. And a lot of programs reduce recidivism so successfully that they save more money than the program costs. Second Chance Act provides funding for organizations to provide those services, and that is in the bill.
We got stimulus dollars here in Virginia for reentry programs, and that high success rate that the mine shaft had where they didn't go back. You know, I seen the figures that we got for reentry programs like that. I don't know if this is at a federal level or a state level. Why did they got $1 million taken away from them? Why didn't they get it back? If it's because those reentry programs really work and keep them from going back.
Well, the state, one of the things the stimulus bill did was gave money to states because they're because of the recession, they're not getting the revenues that they have, and all of the states are in severe budget problems. And unfortunately, the prevention programs are often the first things that get cut. Hopefully, they'll be able to restore the funding. The Second Chance Act is a grant program. It's not a federal program. It's money to state programs. So hopefully, they'll be able to get the money back. But that's one of the challenges when you have programs that are effective. They're usually the first ones to get cut.
Well, is in this budget plan, is America going to quit looking at building prisons and start investing in people instead of prisons?
Hopefully. I've introduced the Youth Promise Act, which invests in children very early to get them on the right track, to keep them on the right track. The way to deal with juveniles is wait for them to join gangs, mess up, get caught, and get into a bidding war as to how much time they're going to serve. We have successfully, for the first time since I have been in Congress, we have defeated the lock them up and throw away the key approach, and we're trying to go in the right direction.
You're listening to Congressman Bobby Scott's April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater about the federal budget and his questions and answers with constituents. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins the April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater with Congressman Bobby Scott about the federal budget.
Hello, my name is Pat Carney. I live in the city of Richmond. 2 days from now is April 15th. And in my opinion, as one of the people who's paying taxes that pays the freight on all this stuff that we're talking about, it's my opinion the current tax code is loophole-ridden and also is used by politicians to promote class difference. You keep hearing about the wealthy paying their fair share and the number of households edging up toward not paying any tax at all is approaching 50%. So my question is real tax code reform part of any discussion that's going on in Washington? If not, why not? And I also would like to respectfully point out that it's not just Washington that has their hands in my pocket, but the state and the city as well. And when you start adding up all the hidden taxes that aren't even like the ones that come in your utility bill and your phone bill and everything else, the tax burden is very onerous. And I would love to hear why the trend seems to be towards so many people paying no tax and other people having to pay the fair share that's approaching, 75% of the load. So,
well, in terms of no tax, people just look at one tax, and that's the income tax.
Mm-hmm.
There are other taxes, as you pointed out. There are a lot
there
of other
others.
Income taxes.
But that's the biggie.
Taxes. Well, actually, the biggie for most people is the payroll tax, which everybody pays,
mm-hmm.
And that is a higher portion. We have a progressive income tax where people, where we have, as a philosophy, adopted the position that the more money you make, the higher portion of your income ought to go to taxes. Some people agree with that, some people don't, but that's the philosophy we have traditionally dealt with. And so if some are not paying, quote, income tax, they're paying a lot of other taxes, particularly the payroll tax, which is the most regressive, that is the lower your income, the higher portion of your income goes to that tax. Warren Buffett has frequently said that he pays a much lower percentage of his income towards taxes than his secretary does. And also, the tax policy that has lower income people paying less taxes actually stimulates the economy. The wealthy do well. And if you look back to the first 8 years I was in office, before 2001, the Dow Jones Industrial Average more than tripled during that period of time. Dow Jones Industrial Average right now is worse than it was in 2001. Anybody that's making a significant income has, and if you look at your, it probably has a 401k or pension fund, IRA or something. And if you look at your 401k, and think of what it would look like if it had tripled rather than been stagnant for the last 8 years, I think people would have less interest than the marginal tax rate. I know in the last, for anybody that's been, who has a 401k in the $500,000 range, which is not unusual, they probably lost more in their more in their 401k in the last 12 months than their whole salary. So if we're winding about a 3% marginal tax rate, if you can get your whole salary back in your 401k, and that's people who are making about $100,000 a year and been working for the last 20 or 30 years, they've got 401ks in the $500,000 range. And if they had their money invested in stocks like most of the people do, they lost more in their 401k than their entire salary, which is, the S&P, that's about average. 40-50% drop is about average for, that's what the S&P 500 did.
Good evening. My name is Cassandra Berkeley Johnson. And I guess I have more of a statement to say versus a question. Everything I have applied for, I've been turned down for everything. Just because I have no dependents, because the first thing they'll tell you is, do you have any dependents? No, I don't. Do you have anyone disabled, elderly living in your home? No, I don't. So because I don't fit into that category, there just aren't programs out there to help people like myself that need it temporarily. I would never ask for something from anyone if I absolutely didn't need it.
Well, the temporary assistance for people who temporarily lost their job is unemployment compensation. And the gentleman behind you tried to get an extension for unemployment benefits in the General Assembly that just ended. Unfortunately, his position didn't prevail, and we turned away, $125
million?
$125 million that would help people who just temporarily lost their jobs. One of the things that would help you is if the economy would turn around, so when you apply for a job, there'll be some jobs there. So we're trying to create some jobs.
You've been listening to Congressman Bobby Scott's April 13 town hall meeting at the Enrico Theater about the federal budget and his questions and answers with constituents. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's top three tips are about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, formerly called food stamps. The first tip is that SNAP is a federal program that pays for food for low-income households. Recipients are given a card like a debit card that could be used to buy food. In Virginia, the card is called the Cardinal Card. The second tip is that SNAP benefits are given to a household, a group of people who buy and prepare food together. They don't have to be related to each other or share their income. The third tip is that households must have low resources and low income to get SNAP benefits. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King. And for this week, that's our top three tips about the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This year, the Legal Services Corporation marks its 35th anniversary as an independent federal agency providing federal funding for legal aid societies. Join us next week as John Whitfield, Executive Director of Blue Ridge Legal Services in Harrisonburg, Virginia, answers the fundamental question, why legal aid? That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegberg.